thank you for tuning in. This is Matt Santos of the Mile High Show, and you are listening to episode 143. This was a fun one. I got a chance to sit down with somebody I don't know that well, but got a chance to spend a couple hours talking to Jack Galvin. He is a stand-up comic and a father based out of the Phoenix area. And we were talking about his involvement in the local comedy scene, how he got started, and most of all, his involvement with the Big Pine Comedy Festival. Now, last fall was when I first met Jack. We didn't spend a whole lot of time together, but got a chance to talk to him a little bit. We actually roomed together one night of the Big Pine Comedy Festival 2016. That was the second annual, and had talked to him a little bit this past spring as well. He was one of the hands helping out with the Bird City Comedy Festival in Phoenix that I was down. We recorded a podcast there with Danny LaBelle, and I did a lot of pictures there. We have done that the last couple of years. Well, I will be doing so again this year in September, the 14th, 15th, and 16th in Flagstaff for the third annual Big Pine Comedy Festival. And that's why, one of the reasons why Jack and I were talking today. We met at a great spot he suggested, so check them out, YC's Mongolian Grill. There's a few of them. We were in the Scottsdale one. A great, great restaurant, delicious food, really relaxed atmosphere, and best of all, they had really good air conditioning because it's hot down here this weekend. We're spending the weekend, my wife and my son and I, having some fun in and around the pool, hanging out in Phoenix. But I took the opportunity to sit down with Jack Galvin. Now, you can find out his information primarily at TheRealJackGalvin.com. There's links to his social media there, but he's on Twitter and Instagram at TheRealJackGalvin. And information on the Big Pine Comedy Festival is BigPineComedyFestival.com. Again, September 14th, 15th, and 16th. I am really, really excited about being part of this festival because I get to see some great names in comedy. Brant Tobler will be there. I'm going to get a chance to see him this Sunday in just a couple of days in Tempe. Marsha Warfield, if you are a fan of Night Court, if you remember that show, she was on that, but years, decades as a stand-up comedy or stand-up comedian. Who else is on there? Check out BigPineComedyFestival.com for a full list. Our old friend Anthony DeSimito will be there. Genevieve Rice, the founder of the Bird City Comedy Festival. Jesse Johnson, got a chance to meet her. She's based out of Phoenix. I think she's in L.A. now. Bill Laskowski, he'll be there. Mike Enders, Mason Pipes, Matt Broom. Those are just some of the locals. But again, nationally touring, national headlining comedians like Brant Tobler. Who else? Freddie Lockhart. I'm looking forward to that as well. Jack Jr., Allison Gill, and Kayvon. It goes on and on. You'll hear about it. What changes have come along for the 2017 Big Pine Comedy Festival? They were adding seminars, workshops, all kinds of good stuff. And when I say they, that is Hillary Hudson and Jack Galvin. They have taken the reins of the Big Pine Comedy Festival, and I am really looking forward to it. So I'll let you get to the show. I hope you enjoy listening to Jack Galvin as much as I enjoyed talking with him. So sit back and enjoy 143 of the Mile High Show. It's brought to you this week, as it is always, by Amazon. Please use that Amazon link at milehighshow.com to do all your online shopping. And it is a way to support the show, support the artists and performers we sit with, and a way for you to get all your shopping done and giving us a little thank you at the end of every month. So sit back and enjoy the real Jack Galvin on the Mile High Show. And don't forget, BigPineComedyFestival.com is where you can get your festival pass and a schedule of all the locations, the venues, and the performers for the September 14th, 15th, and 16th Big Pine Comedy Festival in Flagstaff, Arizona.
Too close to my mouth. Being a singer in karaoke, I always have it right here. So
So comedy's just the.
So you'll have to clean this. You'll have to clean the pad on the microphone.
Worst case is that you don't know where that was last week.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. Actually, I think that might be the one Jonathan Gregory That's what, used.
I was about to say, as long as Jonathan Gregory didn't use it, I don't care. Now I'm worried.
Right off the bat, how do folks find you? The one and only Jack Galvin.
The one and only Jack
Website,
Galvin.
Website, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, anything you got?
I have all that stuff. I on Facebook and Instagram, you can find me at The Real Jack Galvin. And that's because there's a lot of Jack Galvins out there. There's a lot of Jack Galvins, and there was already the Jack Galvin and Real Jack Galvin. So I just went with The Real Jack Galvin, which is turned into a joke kind of with all the comedians. They go, like whenever I come into a building, they're always like, oh, here's The Real Jack Galvin. Which is funny because I'm actually John Galvin.
I was going to say, this will raise your stalker Spidey senses. When Hillary sent me your phone number, said get in touch with you on that Facebook message, I didn't know if it was a cell number or like an office number or whatever, so I Googled your number, and it gives all kinds of info. You ever Google your own phone number?
I've never Googled my own phone number.
Mine doesn't give anything. It just says, out of Prescott, and that's it. Yours has it's issued to John Galvin.
Okay,
so I figured what? Jack John.
Yeah, okay.
I kind of knew all that already. Tells you who your service provider is, because I didn't want to text it because I've done that before. I've texted people on a home number, and I don't know what happens to it, but I never hear from them again.
Yeah, because it goes nowhere. It goes nowhere.
Well, some systems will. You'll get a buddy of mine. I've got all his numbers in my phone, and if I hit the wrong one, I'll text his landline, and I don't know who his provider is, but he'll call me back, and he goes, yeah, I got the, he gets like a, you know, generic voice to text.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a robot voice.
Okay.
Types out takes my text and reads it to him.
Okay.
But I don't know if that's a specific provider to him, or it might be like a Google voice.
Well, they do have that thing where if you have a home line, if you're one of the 2% that has a home line, a lot of times, if you call the home and no one's there, it'll forward it right to your cell phone after like a certain amount of rings. But I don't, you gotta have a home to have a home line, right?
Yeah, I had one until not that long. Well, not a home line. I had a landline at our shop. I had an office in Chino. And the only reason I had it was because it was tied to the alarm system.
Okay.
So I had to have a phone line. And then since I did, I plugged in an old fax machine that I had. I never called out on it.
Yeah.
Never received a fax. Never, but it was sitting there. And then I had to fax something one day.
Yeah.
And I go, oh, I've got a fax machine. It didn't work. You couldn't even feed. There was like dust bunnies all stuck. Well,
that's why they had to make fax machines like other things. They had to make them like copiers and scanners, because who's going to go out and just buy just a fax machine? People fax still? Hopefully there's not a lot of young kids listening to this, because they're not going to know what we're talking about.
Nobody
right now
listens to this. All right. This just goes into it. I just save them for myself. So what I wanted to, we had a nice, this is the most I've ever talked to you, was leading up to this. We had a good lunch and kicked back in the 175 degree heat of Scottsdale.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the place we ate. Let's do a quick plug for them.
Do a quick plug. We ate at YC's Mongolian Grill, the one in the pavilions in Scottsdale, which is, in my opinion, the best one out of all of them.
It was great.
Been going there since I was a kid. I mean, parents took us there. It was fun. You kind of build your own bowl of what you want to go on the grill, and you kind of do it your way, which is nice. Cause I'm a picky eater, so I get to put whatever I want in it, leave all the other stuff out, and they have ice cream cones. Who doesn't love ice cream cones at the end of anything?
Well, we didn't get any ice cream. Maybe we should sneak back in after doing this.
Well, you know,
I didn't think of that.
We could just tell them we were just there.
You were talking. You're slimming down a little bit. You changed your eating habits a little.
Because
you hit those rice noodles.
I hit the rice noodles because I'm trying to go gluten-free. I'm just trying to have more energy.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing for me, is just being tired a lot, because we're just, you know, always in the go throughout the day, and then comedy clubs late at night. Yeah. So I'm just trying to, you know, I'm not that old. I'm only 35, but, you know, I feel like I could go to bed every night at 7, so I needed something. I just needed to cut something out, and I didn't want it to work because I just wanted to keep eating gluten. But carry it does
little,
work.
Carry around a little sack of flour with
just
you.
A little sack of flour.
Just sprinkle it on things.
Just remind me. This is the good life. It's like. But my
careful where you pull it out. You know, you go to a bar, pull out a sack of flour. You might be able to make a few bucks. So, little bumps of gluten.
Maybe. Bumps of gluten for anybody that's just really jonesing for one. Just, you know, it's going to hurt for a little bit, but you're gonna feel a lot better in a few minutes. It hasn't been easy. It's my friend, she's been gluten free. Hillary Hudson, who also is part of the festival, main part of the festival. She did it like a year and a half ago, and she's lost a lot of weight, and she feels fantastic. So she's been trying to get me to do this for pretty much since she started, and I was just so against it. But now that
you guys go way back, huh?
Way back, high school. Youth group, church youth group is where we first met. She dated a friend of mine, and I dated a friend of hers. And family dinners on Sunday with her family and the three like main families of the church that started it. And just, I mean, been friends pretty much ever since.
Cool.
We had some moments where we didn't talk.
Recent.
No, over
festival,
6 years.
Festival related?
Only when I was married, you know, because she's a woman and she's a friend, and that's a tough thing to have. So, my fault, all my fault. I don't deserve to be her friend, but she's a great person and has a great heart, and we're still best friends up until this time.
I'm pretty much, that sums up my relationship with pretty much all of my friends. I don't deserve to be anybody's friend.
Yeah, I mean, I consider myself a decent person, but I've made, plenty of mistakes.
Yeah.
One of the reasons you end up, the reason you end up in comedy is you make a mistake somewhere, and you just got to talk about it.
And then when you really mess up with that, you just buy a recorder and do a podcast, and that's your life. It's just talking to yourself Starbucks.
I mean, hey, I talk about myself a lot, so for you to be here sounds beautiful.
Get a recorder, and then you can almost justify it. Let's talk a little bit about you growing up, your childhood. You grew up down here in the Valley?
Yeah, I grew up in North Phoenix, just outside of Scottsdale. Went to high school at Horizon High School. And
now, what was Horizon? Is that public school, or is that?
Public school. Yeah. I did public my whole life. I never went into the private school. Part of life, but when I lived out here,
I thought it was mandatory in Scottsdale. No,
I was just outside of Scottsdale.
Scottsdale
adjacent. Like a lot of my friends had things, and I had a great life, but I didn't have all the things, and that's fine. But I had friends that got brand new cars when they were at 16. Brand new Honda Accords, brand new SUVs, and I got an 85 Buick Regal. Passed out from my grandma. I loved it. It was the greatest thing ever, but no private schools for me. Just public. I loved it though. I loved growing up here. We moved away a couple times and moved actually right back to our same house because we loved it here so much.
What did folks do? What'd your dad do?
My dad was a salesman.
Yeah.
His whole life. A really great salesman. Probably the main reason I'm in comedy right now is because he was so funny. Because he just had a way with people. He could talk to anybody. He can make anybody feel comfortable, and he always wanted to be a comedian his whole life.
Never got on stage?
Never got on stage once. He wanted to be an actor, too. He wanted to be a character actor. He always talked about it.
Yeah.
And when he was young, he grew up in Ohio, Cincinnati, and he would drive in the summertime to California with some friends of his, and they would take acting classes.
Wow.
And that's what he wanted to do. And I think he would have been – I think I'm funny, and I think he would – run circles around me on stage if he ever got the ability to do it. And so that's where I think I get a lot of my ability to just talk to people.
Yeah.
Just watching him just interact his whole life. And he just did sales. He traveled. He was gone a lot. He was a million mile member on two different airlines.
Wow. What did he sell?
Everything. Main thing was vacuums, which was weird. He worked for Eureka, excuse me.
Yeah.
In the early 80s and 90s, and the reason we moved to Arizona when I was 5 was you got a job with Bosch.
Bosch.
appliances. Okay. But they made vacuums as well.
Uh-huh.
They do a lot of appliances, like a lot of your, like, I think refrigerators and stuff like that.
Are they
Bosch.
Related to the, this might be a dumb question, like the spark plug company? Is that this?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know anything about cars. Spark plug is a car thing,
there's
right?
There's a Bosch spark plug. I don't know. Well, like a GE will make everything.
Well, Bosch. I mean, I think there's cars sponsored by Bosch and like on like you know the NASCARs and stuff like that. So he worked there 5 years and then he sold. He worked for a place called ThermoServe, and they made like plastic cupware, like snap-on tool cups. Have you ever seen those? Like they made a lot of those, and we moved to Dallas for a year, 2 years. For that, and we didn't enjoy that, so we moved back to Arizona. Yeah. And then he worked for Panasonic for a long time. He ran the vacuum division for Panasonic.
Oh, wow.
And then he died when he was 57, three years ago, over 3 years ago. And he was about to start another venture
yeah.
With my uncle, which now that business is super successful now, which is unfortunate because he was always looking for that one thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he was a businessman up until he died.
And he was 57 when he died?
57, young.
My dad was 56. And it's creepy because I'm getting there. I'm close to that. I'm 51. Yeah. And, it's just weird how you look at things when you're a kid and, you know, 20s old.
Oh,
and 30s old. And now it's like, man, I wish I could use 35. I wish I could go back to 35.
And I wish I could go back to 25.
But just the when I think about how, you know, my mom and dad got married. Let's see, she was 20. They got married in 57, I think, 57, 58.
Okay.
High school graduates both. That was it. And supporting, there was five of us growing up. And thinking back to when I was like my son's age, he's 7, you got an 8-year-old.
Yeah.
When I think back to what my parents were like and what they were doing when I was my son's age compared to what I'm doing now, it's like, how did they, I don't understand. I can't comprehend how they got to do, they accomplished what they did.
I still can't either.
Yeah.
My dad did college, did some college, but he didn't, never finished. Mom never finished. Yeah. And I lived a great life.
Yeah.
I mean, a great life. I mean, I still haven't figured that part of life out yet. I mean, I'm a good dad to my son because my dad was so great to me.
Yeah.
And I want to, his dad wasn't great to him. His dad was out of the picture pretty quick in life.
So he broke the cycle.
And he broke it. Oh, 100%. Yeah. You know, my dad lived to take care of my sister and myself. And I think that's also a little part of the problem. The reason he passed away is he committed suicide.
Ooh.
On Mother's Day in 2014. And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that he never went and chased these dreams that he had.
Yeah.
He put us first, which I think in life, there is a balance in life where you have to be somewhat selfish sometimes. You know what I mean? You have to do things for yourself, too, because you'll regret it, I think.
Well, that and the resentment can settle in. You know, you especially see that with spouses. You know, it's like if it's too one-sided on the give and take, you can get your so-called responsibilities taken care of. But if you don't have an outlet, whether it be a creative, artistic, something like that, or you know, some people, you know, gardening, whatever it is, if you never get a chance to do that for yourself, you can still get everything done that you need to do. But in the back of your mind, you go, well, you start resenting the people that you're doing it for. And that could be an ugly cycle.
Oh, it's very ugly. And a lot of it is just depression. You know, a lot of it is mental illness. It's a real thing. It's something that's very close to us. We do a lot of stuff with suicide prevention because it's something that people just don't talk about enough.
Yeah.
You know, if you're sick, you don't feel good, you go to the doctor, right?
Yeah.
Why, you know, you should be able just to go to the doctor. And that was a part of him was he was old school. He believed that he didn't need medication. He was stronger than that.
Suck it up.
You're not always. It's a tough thing. And I think that's the reason I got into, that's the main reason I got into comedy, you know, because he was a big dreamer. he always wanted to do these great things and do these really cool, interesting things that I always looked up to him about, but he never did them because he was always taking care of people.
Yeah.
And I, at the time when he died, I just turned 32, and I said to myself, I don't want to be 57.
Yeah.
I was divorced at the time already for a couple years. So I had a responsibility with my son, but I didn't really, other than that, there wasn't really anything else holding me to just lock down a job I didn't want to do.
Yeah.
So I said, that's it. I'm going to go chase this.
The comedy.
And the comedy. Because he always thought that that's where I should go. Like, yeah. I wanted to be a singer my whole life. And he was always very, you should go do it. You know, he was always right there to support me.
That's great, the support, yeah.
And, but I never did it still. And I don't think he believed, I think he believed I was funnier than I was a good singer.
Yeah.
Which is fine. That's fine. And that's okay, too. And he said, he would always go, you're so quick. People like you.
Yeah.
He goes, I think and our thing was, we would be like, man, I'd love to be on one night. Just really feel funny.
Yeah.
And then go to an open mic and just crush it.
Yeah.
Thinking that's what it was. Which is, that's nothing what it is. It's not about being on. It's about being prepared.
Yeah.
You know, writing something down.
Yeah.
That you can tell on stage that's already funny, not just going up there and winging it your first time ever. I mean, some people have that ability. I don't have that ability.
And the bad thing about that, because you hear about that every once, somebody comes in and goes, well, I crush. Well, mm-hmm. You go to an open mic, it's 10 other people who are doing the same thing. It's maybe their first, second time up. Yeah. They've got four or five friends, so everybody's there to be supportive sometimes, not always, but sometimes. So you could open up with just a riff, get a bunch of laughs. 3 minutes later, you're done. You go, hey, I killed. That's not a comedy audience. That's your friends who know you. A bringer, yeah.
Yeah, that's the biggest misconception of comedy. Is, you know, we all get into comedy because we've made people laugh in our life. Yeah. And most of those people are people that we've known for years, our friends and our family. You know, that's why I always tell people, I say, now your job as a comedian is to make other people who know nothing about you, never seen you before, also laugh at that same story, you know, and that's a challenging thing. I mean, it's still intimidating. I still get, you know, I've only been doing it 2.5 years, but I'm still nervous up there. But I think that's because I care. You know, I really care about it, and I really want to do well. But I remember the first time I took a class. That was my first experience at comedy. I took a class at the Comedy Spot in Old Town Scottsdale.
Yeah,
and once I said I was going to do comedy, I did 6 months later. You know, I had one of those, like, I'll wait till the beginning of the year. It's July. I'm going to wait till January, I think, you know. And then the first time I went, I sat in my car. I got there half an hour early, and I sat in my car for about an hour and a half.
That was at the Comedy Spot?
Man, I never went in. I sat in my car, and I just sat there. I was smoking cigarettes at the time, so I think I was chain smoking cigarettes. And I never went in, but I told people that I was gonna go do this thing. So now I didn't do it, and I'm not a great liar. So I had to go tell these people that I didn't do it, and that was embarrassing. And it felt like I was defeated for sure. And then I went back the next week and I did it.
Did you take anybody with you, or you go solo?
I went solo.
Yeah.
I didn't really have anybody that I knew that was really interested in doing it. I still, none of my friends that I knew before comedy, no one's ever showed interest in ever wanting to do it. So, plus I'm 32. So a lot of my friends have careers. They're already there. You know what I mean? Like, they already have they figured out what they wanted to do somewhat, you know? And the best thing about that was I went to the class, and I only went to the class once.
Yeah.
And I met people, and they said, you know, the best thing to really do now is to go do open mics, which I didn't really know what that was.
Yeah.
And I went to, and he goes, go to Tosto's on Wednesday night. There's a guy there named Sidney Smith. He runs it. It's called, the show at the time was called Crack Ups, but it was at the bar Tosto's.
Yeah.
And I think I found the number to Tosto's, not knowing that it was Sidney Smith's cell phone number. it wasn't like a phone in the bar. And I think I called it 30 times in 3 hours just because I wanted to ask questions about the open mic, you know, how it worked and stuff. And finally, he called me back, and he's like, this is a cell phone of a guy who runs the open mic. Can you not call me 30 times? You know, just thinking it was an empty bar, it was ringing.
Yeah.
And then I went and did it, and fell in love with it.
Yeah.
And I don't think that'll ever go away.
In the very beginning of doing your open mics, when you would show up, mm-hmm. did you prefer to go with nobody? Like, you didn't bring any friends to sit in the audience? I'm curious because I've done, it's been a long time, but I used to, years ago, I used to do open mics and stuff in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Yeah.
I did them pretty regular for a number of months. It was never something that I wasn't any good. It's okay. Basically what it boils down to. But there would be times when I would take friends.
Yeah.
I always found it easier to go when I didn't know anybody. It was the opportunity to bomb in peace. You know what I mean? To just kind of not be with people there that I knew. I was trying to do it for them instead of actually formulating what I was going to say.
Yeah.
It was always easier for me to work things out if I didn't know anybody there because I had nothing to lose.
Yeah.
That's how it was for me anyway.
I didn't bring anyone. I mean, I shouldn't say that. I brought Hillary with me.
Yeah.
But that was probably the third time. And that was mainly because she was interested in to see what it was like.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're so close that her being there and bombing in front of her didn't really matter to me that much. You know, she wasn't going to care. But she was also interested in helping me with social media and managing me in a sense, you know, in the beginning. And she offered, so I brought her along, and my grandma went actually to my fourth one. She was in town. And it was actually great because that night Sydney was picking the top two, sets that night.
Yeah.
We're going to open the weekend shows there.
Yeah.
And I got picked, and which was the greatest feeling in the world.
Yeah.
And my grandma was there. I was on cloud nine, just living it up. And it wasn't good. But I was good enough to get on there on a bar, you know.
Yeah.
Show.
To a real gig.
You know, a sense of real gig. And it was nice. And, you know, I had 7 minutes, but it wasn't a good 7 minutes.
Yeah.
But to me, it was amazing. You know, I loved every minute of it. And I still don't bring people to a lot of open mics now, because that's where I like to try new stuff.
Yeah,
I don't want to
experiment a little bit.
I got to bring people when there's a possibility that I may not get a laugh for 5 minutes. You know, I mean, so I've always had that outlook on open mics where I just like it's I like it just to be me working it, and I kind of had the idea too in the beginning, where I consciously thought like I want to try to make people laugh that didn't know me.
Yeah.
That was the true test.
Make a stranger laugh.
Make someone that never met you before just laugh, you know? And that's still my favorite thing to do. I mean, I do bring people if I have bigger shows and stuff like that. Yeah. I'll invite people, but yeah, to make a crowd full of strangers laugh is the best feeling in the world.
Was comedy something that, when did you first, I mean, what'd you say? You've been doing it a couple years?
Two and a half, yeah.
2.5 years. Mm-hmm. Was it something you wanted to do as a kid? You get that from your dad, or was it something that you didn't even think about until later?
I probably didn't think about it at all until I was in my 20s.
Really?
Because music was such a sports when I was younger. I wanted to be a baseball player. Sports, you know, growing up out here, baseball was king.
Yeah, yeah.
And I played it year round to the point where I got burnt out. And then I got into bowling in high school.
Bowling.
I bowled. I won state tournament in juniors.
Cool.
And I had bowling scholarship money to colleges, which I never used. And then I realized that, you know, when I turned 18, I had places were asking that they would sponsor me to go pro. And I was like, I don't want to be a pro bowler. And then I got into chorus, and I got into music, and I was like, I want to be a singer. And I took it seriously, but I had a decent voice, but I couldn't figure out the guitar, and it frustrated me.
Yeah.
So when I was in my 20s, that's when my dad and I would start talking about comedy. He'd be like, man, you should go to an open mic. You should do this. And I thought about it, but until I got on stage, I never thought I would ever get on stage and have, you know, enough courage to go up there and try to make people laugh. I never thought I'd think about it, and it'd be so far away that it never felt like it was reachable to ever do it. And then 32, hanging out with Hillary after my dad passed away, a couple months after, we're hanging out in her backyard, and we were all laughing, and I was telling jokes and kind of got in that little rhythm you get into, and they're like, why don't you do this? And I'm like, you know, I've been thinking about it because everything that happened to my dad. And
for 15 years.
For 15 years. And that was it. She really gave me gave me the push. You know, she's a good friend. She believes in people, you know. And my dad, like I said, my dad and her have a lot in common when it comes to things they do in certain ways. Like, not the depression part or anything like that, but just the drive in certain ways. Mm-hmm. And just the way that they
motivation
they believe in people. They just really they really do. And it's contagious. So
yeah,
I was like, I got to do it.
I remember as a kid, I've always liked comedy. As a kid, I'm the youngest of five, youngest of six. We had a brother that passed, but as the youngest, so I had my entertainment, my music, and stuff was always trickled down. So the kids in my grades growing up, I was listening to stuff that my older brothers and sisters were. So I always felt kind of out of place there, you know. But I remember loving watching comics on TV. You know, we'd stay up. It was a treat staying up late. My dad worked a swing shift, so he'd get home at 10:30, 11 o'clock, watch the news, and like summertime or on a Friday, we'd get to stay up with him, watch the news, and then watch Carson. And if you see in the monologue, and then they introduce the guests, you know, that a stand-up comic was going to be on, that was a big deal to us. And we're talking, you know, like this is in the 70s, early and mid-70s. You know, so Don Rickles, Buddy Hackett. Yeah. David Brenner, you know, the comedy.
It's great.
Transferring from the old, really old school of, you know, the Henny Youngmans and stuff through the, and then Carlin and that in the 60s and into the 70s, where it was more in line with what you're seeing now.
Of course, yeah.
Where it was just like in the infancy stages. I always loved that, but. And that's why for me, when podcasting first became something, you know, a decade, 12 years ago, whenever it was, for me, it was like a revelation because I loved watching the comics, but more than watching them do their bits, doing their few minutes of stand-up, when they would sit and panel and talk with the host, or like in the daytime, Merv Griffin, Michael Douglas and stuff, when they're afternoon shows, because then they would usually sit longer with them because they, you know, and the Tonight Show was more quick.
Yeah.
Some of those afternoon talk shows where you would just watch them, and, you know, they're doing bits, but it's more in conversational style.
Yeah.
I love that more than anything. That was my favorite part of the show.
Okay.
When a comic would be sitting on the couch talking to the host. And now that's podcasting. And that's the best.
Well, yeah. And I think the reason it is because of people like you that grew up watching that and loving that, you know. Stand-up for me wasn't – my dad was a huge Rodney Dangerfield fan.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I remember seeing, like – I remember seeing – I can't think of his name right now – Raw. I remember seeing –
Eddie Murphy?
Yeah, I remember seeing them watch his specials as a kid, but not really watching – you know, obviously not really watching it because I was young and it was pretty dirty. But I remember, like, seeing that. But I really don't remember seeing a ton – movies were so big in my family – that, like, you know, we'd watch all the Rodney movies. We'd watch my dad, you know, loved comedies. So we'd watch movies. And I knew these people were stand-ups, too. Like, I understood what that was.
But you knew them through the movies.
I knew them through the movies. I don't remember sitting down and watching a ton of stand-up with people as a kid. Not watching a ton of stand-up probably till my early 20s. I started going to, like, the improvs. And it wasn't because I was the one. It was other friends that were like, let's go to the improv tonight and go watch some stand-up. And even then, watching it, it didn't seem like something feasible to do. You know? It didn't seem like I would ever, you know, I was like, oh, that'd be great. That'd be fun. But in my head, I wasn't like, oh, I got to go do that tomorrow. I got to go try that, which is still weird to say that because there's so many comics that, you know, when I hear them do podcasts, they're like, I knew since I was eight.
Yeah.
I was like, eight? I mean, at eight, I loved baseball.
You were going to be a pro ball player.
That was it. You know, like, you know, because that's what I was around 24/7. There, you know, I couldn't imagine being eight and being like, I want to be a stand-up.
Yeah.
It just seems... bizarre to me.
As a kid watching, I always wanted to do something, but I did. It wasn't even like, oddly enough, I didn't want to be the guy telling the jokes.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be one of the guys sitting on the couch talking with him. Kind of like this.
Yeah.
Just took me 50 years, 40 years to get here. But I enjoyed the aspect. And I forget who it was. I want to say Billy Crystal. It might be a quote from him. I'm probably getting it wrong. But they, in an interview, he was asked, were you the class clown?
Mm-hmm.
He says, no, the class. I was the class comedian. He's the class clown was the guy who got up on the lunch table and dropped his pants and mooned everybody. The class comedian was the guy that talked him into doing it. That's kind of what I like being, not behind the scenes, but I like to, I think writing,
yeah,
comedic writing would be more to suit me, and that's kind of what I do. I had a weekly column up in Prescott for 5-6 years, and it was humorous. It was kind of a day in the life kind of thing, and I loved doing that. It was great. It had a great following.
Yeah.
What I do on radio and on the podcast, kind of the same thing. It's not comedy, but it's conversation, and it's sometimes funny, sometimes not, but well, I hope it's interesting, you know?
Well, conversation to me is, I listen to podcasts 24/7. I mean, Mark Maron's WTF obviously is fantastic.
Yeah.
And I use those things as tools.
Yeah.
I use them, you know, because his conversations started off a lot like ours started off, you know?
Yeah.
Your life and what got you into, you know, doing this. And that's the stuff I want to hear. I want to hear about these things that they did because I'm older and I don't, you know, obviously I want to grind and push just like everyone else, but I need to get a little farther ahead.
Yeah.
You know, at least with the knowledge than, you know, I don't want to go out and get drunk every night. You know, I don't want to go out and do all those things. I'm not interested in partying.
Yeah.
You know, I want to do it because I want to be on stage.
Yeah.
That's it. And for it, just like Billy Crystal, I was neither. I wasn't the class clown or the class comedian. I was very shy.
Yeah,
I was very shy most of my life. And I think what broke me out of that show was taking beginning men's chorus senior year of high school, because I had done so bad junior year that I had to have a full schedule. And it pushed me. It made me do things I never did before. It made me try out for the ensemble of this Broadway Under the Stars thing where I'm dancing and singing and making it, you know. But just even if I didn't make it, just having the courage to go out there and attempt to dance and sing at 6'4", 280 in senior high school when I'm awkward kind of still, you know, a little bit, you know.
Your number? What were you doing?
My number? we did this thing called Broader Than a Stars, and it was amazing. I had a music teacher. Her name was Judy DeRocher. She was unbelievable. She went on to teach at U of A after us. We had this thing every year, Broader Than a Stars, where every course class would have a number, and ours went from like 2000s up until 2000, because I graduated 2000. So it was music through the ages, and our beginning men's chorus we did. Blues Brothers song, and I got the first solo. So I had to go up there and John Belushi dance, you know, crazy, do the side, have the whole suit on, the hat. And we did that in front of, you know, three nights in front of 1,000 people each night.
Oh, wow.
And then I made the ensemble, which I had to I was on stage. I didn't play football. I was the biggest guy at school. I didn't play football. And all the football players are there watching because they're dating the girls that are in chorus.
Yeah.
And I got sequined, I got like sequined
Please tell me there's video of this.
I have a video of it. I have a video of the whole thing. Sparkly hands, you know, because we're doing all these old songs that are just like, you know. And a lot of the motions aren't too crazy, so it's a lot of hand gestures and a lot of, you know, spirit figures kind of in a way. And I think, I just actually told this story recently. I thought, you know, I can see all these football players in there. And I'm just thinking the next day I'm going to get harassed, made fun of. And they were just totally cool. They were like, that was really great. That was awesome.
Yeah.
Which is a big confident boost for me that people enjoyed it. But I mean, we did Splish Splash where I went out, you know, and I was a heavier guy. And a lot of these guys are skinny because they're in high school. And I was heavier and I had, you know, I'm top heavier, you know. So like I'm out there with a towel shimmying to Splish Splash. you know, trying not
is
to.
Is it on YouTube?
No, it's not on YouTube. And it
come on.
And I'm like purposely trying not to shimmy too hard.
You lose your towel.
So I had shorts underneath. I'm a high school. I'm self conscious.
Come on,
gets,
you're not
you
method.
Know. No, not method. I didn't even know what method was back then. I just knew that I didn't want my boobs to shake too hard because I didn't want the foam fingers. So I'd shimmy like a half shimmy and try to get the words out.
Oh, man.
And because and I was shy, you know. So I'm, you know, and that I think that really broke me out of my seal to be able to do things. Like I've, you know, even to this day, I do a lot of improv.
Yeah.
And I do a lot of characters. And one of my, you know, one thing I did last year was I did a lip sync battle at the Comedy Spot.
Yeah.
And I dressed as Britney Spears. like skirt, just wig. I mean, fully Britney Spears.
And beard.
With beard. I didn't take the beard off. My beard was probably longer at the time. You know, and I wouldn't have been able to do stuff like that, I don't think, if it was for that experience. So that experience, that was all my dad. I was going to take weightlifting. And my dad's like, don't take weight. Because they brought my parents into school because my credit card or my report card from second semester of junior year was so bad that they brought my parents in to see if I was doing drugs. And I was like, and I was the straightest high school kid ever. I didn't drink in high school. I didn't do drugs in high school. And they knew that. My dad's like, he just doesn't care right now. My parents are going through a tough time. They got divorced not so long after that. So I think I sensed it.
Yeah.
And I kind of just stopped. And I'm like, I'm going to do weightlifting. And my dad's like, you don't want to weightlift. We have a gym in the garage. Like, we had a nice gym in the garage. Yeah. He's like, you sing all the time. You're singing in the shower. You're singing in your room. Why don't you take chorus and learn maybe a little something, you know, and enjoy it. And I took his advice, and I did. And it was the best thing that I probably ever did. It broke me out of my shell.
Nice.
It just gave me confidence. And that's all comedy is.
Yeah.
Comedy
is
all confidence. I always tell people, I say, the moment they don't believe you or they don't trust you, you lose them. You know, sometimes obviously you got to be funny and you got to be a good writer and you got to, you know, or you got to act out really well, things out really well.
Yeah.
But as long as you do it with confidence, they're going to pay attention.
Yeah.
You know, and the funny will come. So for me, even when I got into comedy, it was just like, I want to be confident. I've never gone on stage with notes, not even an open mic.
Hmm.
I feel like if I can't remember 5 minutes, then I shouldn't be in this.
Yeah.
You know, and then I was a terrible student. It's a terrible student. But I remember things I want to remember.
Yeah.
And I knew I could remember this if I really wanted to, because I can remember every song. I can sing. And that's what I'll do. People ask me, like, before you go on stage, when I did my first 30-minute set, to help me memorize, to just get my brain, you know, focused and ready and to train it, like, I'll just sing like 6 songs front to back by memory just to get the brain going. And I love to sing. So, you know, any reason to belt it out in my house is fine. But I feel like, you know, if you're going to do this, I didn't want anything to ever be a crutch.
Yeah.
I didn't want to ever feel like I had to have notes to do it. That's why I don't drink when I'm at clubs, is because I never wanted to feel like I needed a drink to go on stage.
Yeah.
Because I always heard people say, like, in podcasts, like, people told me that because one day you're gonna think you need it.
Yeah.
And when you think you need something, that's not a good time.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, I'm a little boring, I guess, you know, which is fine.
Do you think it helped by getting into it later in life? And when I say later in life, obviously I've got, you know, decades on you.
Yeah.
But a lot of guys, a lot of comics get into stand-up young, whether it be in college or in early 20s. Do you think it helped you to have that kind of perspective by waiting until after 30 to start?
I mean, 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, I had stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
I was divorced already. I had a kid already. I had lost a lot of things in life, done well at some things, done bad at some things. I've gone, you know, lost my dad. I had a lot of parents got divorced. I found out I had a half brother when I was 15 that no one knew about. I mean, my mom and my dad knew about it, but my sister and I didn't know about it. And so I just been through so much. So, like, even now I'm a storyteller.
Yeah.
I like to tell stories on stage. I think that's the type of comedy I'm good at.
Yeah.
I love other kind of comedy. I love Jim Gaffigan. I love jokes, you know.
Yeah.
But Mike Birbiglia is, like, my favorite. So, like, I you know, I love to tell stories. Also, I like to tell stories because I don't want to ever feel like I'm taking something from someone.
Yeah.
And you have that ability. You know, it's hundreds of comics, thousands of comics now. You can't tell me that someone's not going to go out there and have the same premise as you. But I can tell you right now, probably someone's not going to have the exact same experience as I've had.
Because you're telling stories from your life.
Telling stories from my life.
What we were talking about earlier, the story of you and your nephews at the Butterfly Place.
Yeah.
Which you have to go see Jack Galvin on stage to hear that story.
Yeah, the Butterfly story. My Thug Life story.
Yeah, you're not, you know, you're not telling a joke. You're telling something that happened.
That happened, something that's a true story.
And how, you know, you got to search pretty hard to find somebody with the exact same experience.
Yeah, you know? And there's people out there that have jokes about Butterfly Museum or Butterfly Wonderland Place, but they're completely different.
Yeah.
They're just, you know, because they had different experiences when they went there with their kids or with their friends or whatever. But don't get me wrong. If you could ask me right now, would I rather have started at 18 or 20, would I go back and do it? I would.
Yeah, then you've got 100%. That much more experience.
And
you're jumping into it earlier.
And I used to tell Sidney Smith, I used to go, man, I wish I would have started this when I was 20. He goes, you couldn't. You couldn't do it at 20. And I go, what do you mean? He goes, well, you didn't. You're supposed to do it now.
Yeah.
Don't think that way.
Just, it happened the way it happened.
Yeah, and it just happened. It's happening now because it's supposed to happen now.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't supposed to happen when you were 20. And that's probably right, because then I probably wouldn't have my son. Who knows where I'd be?
Yeah.
And I don't want that, you know. I want, you know.
Yeah.
I'd rather have him, you know. So, I think anybody in comedy has a better chance of writing material when they've lived.
Yeah.
I've never had to really. That's why I don't do observational humor. Really, I mean, I guess I involve observational humor in my stories.
Yeah.
But I don't just stick to those because I have stories.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm trying to do now. I'm trying to go back and talk about stories that happened in my early 20s and when I was a kid, because
through your 35-year-old eye, though. Yeah,
through my 35-year-old eye, with a different opinion on it and a different outlook, you know, a different way of, you know, seeing it now.
Yeah.
Because I want to relate to everyone.
Now what, because I, like I said, I had done stand up years ago in my early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
That was in the San Francisco area where the, you know, there was a comedy club on every corner, in every restaurant, and there was a lot of opportunity to try things there, open mic things. There's a lot of those here in Phoenix. There's a couple Facebook forums that are on open mics and lists them. There's, you know, a dozen or so every week, it seems like.
Oh, there's more. Yeah. I mean, it's already doubled since I started 2.5 years ago.
But, you know, you look in those, what typically the open mics, you go up for what, 7, 5?
I would say anywhere from, out here in LA, I know there's a lot of 3-minute mics, but out here it's pretty much 5 to 7.
Because, and like those 3 minutes, it seems like it would be so much tougher to try and do a 3-minute and try and grab somebody, grab an audience in that short time frame. Because like you're saying, a lot of what I talk about and what I do on the podcast and what I've done, there's some hosting stuff that I've done up in the Prescott area where you have a few minutes to dive into something and structure something in a story. Mm-hmm. I would never be able to do a 3-minute mic.
I don't know where I would start. I mean,
how would you do something like that? To me, that's even tougher.
I've never done one, so I really don't know. I mean, I do a lot of contests because I enjoy them. You know, a lot of people don't like contests because if you don't make it through, they feel like people are just look at you differently, which maybe so. But I just wanted to do time.
Yeah.
A lot of first rounds of contests are 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And a lot of times afterwards, the judges will either come up to me and be like, you know, the reason I didn't let you in because, you know, we want to hear a lot of jokes in 5 minutes. We want to hear, you know, a lot
bam,
of that.
Bam, bam, bam.
And I always do well at them. But if I do 5 minutes, I mean, you're going to get a 5-minute story out of me.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, if you want to, you know, you're going to need to change that if you want to win. But I don't really want to change it. I mean, I don't really want to. I like telling a story. I like, and people like it too. I always get good responses, but I'm never going to be the type of guy that does well there. And I talk to a lot of my friends who are headlining or featuring more, and they have a really hard time because they've been doing it longer than me.
Yeah.
So 5 minutes is like a blink of an eye to them, and they don't even know where to go sometimes with it. But, I mean, I guess if I was going to do 3 minutes, it would...
That'd be tough.
It'd be a three-minute story. But that's what I don't like. I want people to understand me going into it.
This past April, a few months back at Bird City, the Bird City Comedy Festival, I was really, really close that there was the it's closed now. It was the bookstore.
The bookstore? Third Space? No.
Which one?
Third Space still open. Never mind.
No. Yeah. God. Anyway, it's right. It was outside.
Okay.
The stage outside. Mishka was, Shabali was going to be hosting the storyteller show there.
Oh, I know what you're
and
talking
And I forget
about.
What the place is. I think they've closed. The bookstore's closed.
Yeah, no, they closed it. Garden Gnome.
Yes. Yeah. Lawn Gnome.
Lawn Gnome. Sorry. Lawn Gnome.
Lawn Gnome. Garden Gnome.
They probably had some there. They probably had some there, right?
and they still had openings. Like on Thursday, and I was really, really, I was really close to signing up for one for a spot, and I was.
You should have.
Well, and then the show got canceled.
Oh, there you go.
And I was so relieved.
I think you told me about that there.
Yeah, because I was so relieved that it got canceled.
There is something about, I love being on stage. Don't get me wrong. And I think it's just as how we're wired as people.
Yeah.
Like even when you have plans and they get canceled. It's just a freeing feeling.
It's like, oh, like, it's out of my control.
now, if a show gets canceled, like, you think I'd get super bummed, but I'm like, oh, now I can binge watch Orange is the New Black the rest of the night instead of going to do this thing, And that's not a great thing to say out loud, but but I think that's just how we're wired as people. When plans open up, for some reason you breathe and you're like, oh. And like an hour later, you're like, but I really wanted to tell that joke tonight, though.
There's a this. I'm going to put this up probably tonight, tonight or tomorrow morning. Tomorrow night, which would be tonight, the 15th, up in Prescott, because we're heading back tomorrow.
Yeah,
it's a new group up there. I tried to start something up there a couple years ago and just couldn't get much of a response. But they started it up again. Recently, it's a storyteller workshop, and they're doing their first show tomorrow night.
Okay.
I'm going to go check it out, but I'm going to talk to them, the organizers, to try and start participating in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the beautiful things about Bird City and about Big Pine last year. Mm-hmm. It was the first year I went. I didn't go the first year.
Okay.
But because when people think comedy festival, they're thinking stand-up shows all over the place. But there are sketch spots, there's improv, and what I really love are the storyteller aspects of it.
Yeah.
Because that's what I like listening to. It goes back to, when I was a kid.
Yeah.
The shows are great, but I want to hear the stories they're telling on the couch.
Of course, yeah.
And that's something I would really like to start participating in. That's why I want to hook up with these people up in Prescott. And this past Bird City at one of the outer venues. It was a bookstore restaurant, and I can't remember what it was, but they did a couple of them there, and that was my favorite aspect of the festival.
Yeah.
Was going and watching and photographing those, and hearing more of the long form. They were funny. Mm-hmm. Some of them were humorous, but there were spots in there that it wasn't funny. It was very deep. It was very interesting to listen to, and then seeing how the storyteller brings it back in. We were talking earlier about House of Comedy. I've gone to several shows there, and a guy that I've gotten friendly with, Steve Simone, out of a comedy store in L.A., I met him there the first time, had him on the podcast a couple times, but I photographed him and gone to L.A. and San Diego to see him perform.
Yeah.
And we gotten friendly, but last year when he was out here, he called me up and said, hey, I'm going to be in Phoenix again. Why don't you come on down? We'll check out the show and then go get something to eat. Jonathan Gregory was opening for him.
Oh, no.
And what a contrast between Steve Simone's, stories about growing up as a little kid and playing with his brothers and Jonathan Gregory
The creepy comedy of Jonathan Gregory.
But it was a good mix. It was a great. Yeah. And I love Jonathan. He's a hilarious guy.
He's one of my favorite people ever.
But I show up for I think it was a Wednesday show or Thursday. I can't remember. I think it was a Wednesday. He was running Wednesday through the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And one show on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And it got canceled. And I felt bad telling Steve this because I was here for the whole weekend.
Yeah.
So like the next night after the show, we were talking, and I said, I hate to say it, but I'm really glad your Wednesday got canceled. And he's like, why?
Why?
Because what it was Jonathan, Steve, and myself.
Mm-hmm.
And there was they didn't have enough audience, so they canceled the show. So we went next door to that pizza place.
Okay.
And sat for probably 3.5-4 hours.
Mellow Mushroom?
Just talking and swapping stories. And to me, that's way better than the comedy show.
Oh, I mean,
I enjoy comedy. I like watching stand-up. I love the festivals. Mm-hmm. The couple of years I was doing stuff with Bird City and Big Pine. I love them, but for me, strip away all the shows and just the hangs with the comics before and after and late into the night.
It's the best.
And stuff. That it's just it's to me that's the best.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm looking forward to with Big Pine, mm-hmm. because you guys have added a lot. And when I say you guys, I don't know. I know it's you and Hillary, and there's a whole team behind you guys.
Hillary and I are, Hillary's the main force behind all of it. I am right there with her. The festival was given to us.
Ryan Stalder,
who is the founder of Big Pine, who's still... going to be up there, and he still wants to be a part of the festival. The funny guy. And
spent a couple late nights with him this past year.
I've spent many late nights with Ryan Stalder, and I loved when he came up to me. He came up to me the Friday of the last festival, and he's like, it was late night, like 11 o'clock, and he's like, I'm thinking about giving this to you and Hillary. Which has been, the first time we did the festival, we ran the whole thing. I never got into Big Pine.
Yeah.
The first 2 years. Never got into it.
So this year's third.
Third year.
So I missed first. I was there for second.
Yeah. Okay. And I went to the first one. Didn't get in, but I was like, you know what? I want to go up there. I was still pretty new into comedy. I hadn't even done it a year yet.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to meet people. You know, I think that's for me, a comedy festival, is more about the networking than anything else, because you're meeting people all over the U.S.
Yeah.
And you need to meet people in this world of comedy.
Yeah.
You have to. People need to know who you are, and so I was like, let's go up. We'll work. You know, we pretty much were his workhorses. Wherever he wanted us to go, we'd do tickets, whatever.
Taking tickets, handing out badges.
Oh yeah, and we left. It was over on Saturday, but we left Sunday morning. And we're driving, and Hillary, not even looking at me, she's just sitting in the passenger seat, and she goes, how do we get Ryan to give this to us? And I'm not joking, because it's a beautiful place to have a festival.
Yeah.
I mean, in September, the weather's beautiful. There's a chance for monsoons, but it's beautiful, and it's such a neat little town. It's not even that little, but it's right on Route 66.
Yeah.
It's got train tracks right across from the downtown. All the venues are within walking distance. It just set up great for a festival.
Yeah.
And the next year I didn't get in again. And I said, well, let's go up and do it again.
Yeah.
Let's go up there and just work it. Just have fun. It was so much fun last year. Let's do it again. And we never asked him for it. We never told anyone else that secret, that how much we wanted it. And on Friday he goes, I love this. Too much.
Yeah.
Because he's a comic too.
And he's living full time in Southern Cal, isn't he?
Yeah, in Southern Cal, he's living there pretty much full time. He's got a house over by Palm Springs, and he has like a boat in LA. He lives a cool life. And he's like, it's just too much, but I don't want to see it end.
Yeah.
I want it to go on, and I want to give it to you guys. And Hillary said, yes. Like, didn't even think about it.
Yeah.
Just said yes. Not even thinking about how hard it really is.
The logistics and everything. And she knew what she wanted.
And I think the reason it's doing so well is because she's not a comic.
Yeah.
She's an artist. So she has a very artsy way about her. And she, in our church, she used to run events. And I'm talking thousands of people events.
Yeah.
And she was amazing at it. She's very organized. And when she puts her mind...
Oh, so she couldn't be a comic.
No, just no. I haven't written a joke down since I started. Like, I'm just so unorganized and so like not disciplined in some ways. And she's just this has been her focus since that day. She works in this thing. I always tell everybody 8 hours. She goes, no, tell them the truth. It's more like 10 or 12, which it is. She works. Yeah. She's on vacation right now in Seattle. She's working on Big Pine. I guarantee it right now. And she had a vision for it. You know, she knew what she wanted to do. We turned it into a nonprofit, educational nonprofit right away. With my education background and her background in the arts, you know, we wanted to, you know, give money back to schools that are losing art music programs. And we want to do, like, you know, some acting and some improv, just workshops at schools, and just get kids into it, because it's great. It's a great tool to have in any aspect of life.
And like you said, what it did for you, getting in the course, break out of your shell, give you that confidence.
I mean, when you go to an improv class now, and there's 10 people in it, maybe 5 are there to do comedy.
Yeah.
The other ones are there because they need to figure out how to do a... you know, talk about something at work. You know, when they build a project and they got to go pitch it to the they just need better skills. They don't need to say and all that stuff all the time. They need to think quick on their feet.
Yeah.
You know, and I want kids to be able to have that, because sports was my life, and sports is a very good outlet for kids to learn how to work as a team and talk and stuff too. But you can still do sports and kind of be a quiet, outcast person. And I just want kids to be able to know that there are other options out there to help build your self-esteem instead of putting your head in a iPad or a cell phone, you know what I mean? And so, and being passionate about being a teacher, I was a PE teacher, which is, you know, not what we're doing. I thought that was the best route to go. I wanted people to take it seriously, too. I wanted this festival to... It already had the aspect of, man, the comics loved it.
Yeah.
Everybody that went to Big Pine loved Big Pine. But I wanted it to be something more. I got into comedy to make a difference in people's lives. You know what I mean? That's what I want to do.
What are some of the things that you and Hillary, have added to the mix?
So, like I said, it's a nonprofit now. So, educational nonprofit. 20% of the proceeds will go to the schools.
Mm.
And that'll be split 50% with that 20% will be split in half, and it'll go, half will go to Flagstaff, another half will go anywhere else in Arizona. And then because we changed it to an educational nonprofit, we had to add a lot of workshops,
mm-hmm.
a lot of educational programs for anyone, not just the comics, but anyone that has a festival pass in town can go to these workshops. We're going to have, you know, basics down to writing jokes, beginning stand-up, improv, panels, podcasting class. I mean, the festival starts on Thursday, and there's like a welcoming party, and then the shows kind of start.
Yeah.
At like 5 and go until midnight. But then on Friday and Saturday, starting at 10 o'clock in the morning, there's workshops going on throughout the day. Be able to learn, and we have kid workshops too. We have a cartooning kid class workshop. We have kid improv workshop that are open to children that want to come and just learn these things.
Now, as the organizers, as you guys are going through this, how are you choosing the folks that are going to be leading these workshops?
We reached out to some people that were recommended to us,
mm-hmm.
and then other than that, we had some people reach out to us.
Nice.
And
so word's out there that you guys are revamping.
Oh, word's out for sure.
This.
Oh, yeah.
And again, not to say that Ryan didn't have it, because it was a great festival to begin with, but now you're adding aspects to where
it's to another level.
Yeah, it's really something, because a lot of times, and I've heard this explained on different podcasts and things, that comedy festivals are basically like summer camp for comics. They go out and they have a good time, they have a lot of fun, and that's it. Now, other than networking and stage time, obviously, and meeting new faces and that, what are they taking away from the festival? You're setting up. They're coming away with some good skills, some maybe looking at avenues that they hadn't explored before.
We want comics to come up and have a blast, but also get something out of it.
Yeah.
That was important to us. I've been to a lot of festivals. A lot of festivals I got into were new festivals, and they just didn't have that aspect. I mean, I still went and pushed the networking aspect as much as I could.
Yeah.
But, you know, as in comedy, you never stop learning and growing.
Yeah.
So I think you should always be learning. Yeah. You should always be wanting to learn and to have these opportunities, especially, you know, if you're an Arizona comic, you even if you didn't apply to Big Pine, you get a free pass.
Oh, wow.
To the festival, which gets you into all these things. So if you're brand new, you know, I want the guys that are young.
How are you determining that? How are you determining whether somebody is just calling themselves?
I've been asked this question a couple times. You know, we're gonna go off of good faith. I know most.
Yeah.
I pretty much know every comic in Arizona.
Yeah.
And there's a lot that I don't, but I almost know all of them, and I can tell if you've been on stage or not. You know, with social media. You're not going to tell me if you haven't been on stage at least once in your life. You don't have a picture on Facebook of you holding a microphone in front of a crowd.
I don't.
Yeah, well, you did. When did you do comedy last?
Actually, I did last year.
Oh, did you?
Okay. Last year,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, but you have a, you know, but yeah. A lot of young guys. That was so messed up. And I mean young guys in the comedy world.
Yeah.
Young. I'm not even talking about age. Because to me, I'm young in comedy, but I'm older than most everybody. They're excited about it.
Yeah.
When I got the first picture of me on stage, I threw it on Facebook because I wanted people to see it. I was proud of it. And so you can usually tell, you know, we trust people.
Well, that
probably too much.
No, well, that, and if somebody's wanting to get there to,
why would I stop
to
it?
Take advantage of the classes and workshops, if, and they pull something away from there, then that's going to enrich the whole community anyway.
That's it.
So, yeah, good.
I'm the type of person, when I go to an open mic and I see someone, like I was at open mic recently at Chop and Walk.
Yeah.
Which Charles Engel.
Charles and...
Which Charles is on. That guy's on fire.
Yeah, he's hilarious. And Enders is always...
He's got it all. Both those guys. They're young, they're good looking, and drives me insane. And they're funny. I went there once, and there was like... Charles was in Hawaii the last week, so there wasn't one. And there's also Tosos on Wednesday, so it wasn't very full. There was like eight of us. And one guy did his first set ever. And afterwards, I was like, you know, what's your next move? And he's like, I don't have a next move. And I was like, well, there's so many places to go do this. I said, if you really want to do this, you know, friend request me on Facebook. I'll point you in the right direction of people to do this. And just start doing it. If you love it, you know, keep doing it. And his buddy that was there supporting him, he messaged me the next day and was like, I really appreciate you, you know, just talking to him and telling him that there's an opportunity and routes of, you know, making this goal of yours something that you can actually pursue. Yeah. And he goes, he was lit up the whole rest of the night. But that's how it was for me. That's how, when I was at the comedy class, someone pulled me aside and said, you should go do this. And if he didn't do that, I don't know how long it would have been. I wouldn't have went searching for open mic. I needed someone I needed, you know, someone on me, pushing me. And that's why I got so lucky with Tosos, is because Sidney Smith kind of took me under his wing. And the thing I love about Sidney is he's honest.
Yeah.
And that's hard to find anywhere in life. And he's going to tell you straight up.
Is Tosos still doing the Wednesday open mics?
Yep.
Because they've got the Friday shows. You're going to be on there, what, next week? I think
The 28th we're recording our DVD special for our tour next year, The Highway Heroes, which I'm doing that with John Carden,
mm-hmm.
Rob Mabee,
Raw,
and Jorge Ruiz, which are all fantastic comics.
I think I'm gonna be
like the blue collar guy on that tour. Like I'm the only one I think that wears khakis and like bright colored shirts on stage.
You see Jorge's new haircut?
Oh, I see everything that Jorge does.
The faux hawk.
Jorge got me tickets to the Diamondbacks game.
Yeah.
Last week, so I take my son, and they're great seats.
Oh, nice.
So Jorge's like on my top of my list of great people right now.
Yeah,
he made me a hero to my son. So.
nice. The scene here in Phoenix in the valley out here is it's very diverse,
mm-hmm.
and very strong. Right, and the last couple of years that I've been noticing as I've gotten to know some of you guys that are performing down here. How long has it been like this? Because it's thriving a lot.
Is that fairly new?
Is that
when I started, there was probably, which is like I said, only 2.5 years ago, there's probably, say, 6 opportunities to get on stage. Maybe not even, maybe 5. And there was a lot of clicks.
Yeah.
But I'm a lot different. My view of the comedy world is really just pertains to just when we do our sets.
Yeah.
I hang out a little bit, but I don't really party with them, and I don't do that with them. But so I've always had a good scene. I think there's always drama.
Yeah.
In any aspect of life.
Yeah.
There is here too. But I think that people are just understanding that, you know, if we're going to build what I think Arizona should be when it comes to comedy, when people think comedy, they think of LA and they think of New York. Maybe Chicago a little bit.
Yeah.
Maybe Florida a little bit. I don't know why Arizona can't have that same thought process. We're so close to LA. We have great clubs here.
Yeah.
We have a lot of opportunities, and we have funny people.
Yeah.
And I think the only way you can get to that point in a state that's outside of California and New York is coming together.
Yeah.
And realizing that if we can build something great together, we can maybe all win, you know, in some aspect of this game.
The level of performers here that are showing up at the open mics and at the small bar shows and stuff, like yourself, like Rob, maybe. Michael Longfellow, strong. He's in LA full-time now, right?
He comes back a lot, obviously, but he's probably one of my favorite comics on stage right now.
Just such a same thing. Young, good-looking kid. Want to punch him in the face.
No, when he's in town, he always comes over and hangs out.
Yeah.
And I'm always just like, I just hate you sometimes.
He came up and did a show, I want to say 2 years ago in Prescott. And what is he,
23 at the time.
Yeah,
he just
a couple years ago,
school,
he was like 21,
college,
22. And just his stage presence was that of somebody who's been doing this decades. The confidence he had behind the mic, and I was blown away. I was like, how?
And he started with 18. So he started young. Yeah. And I remember when I saw him for the first time, probably like my second open mic, I saw him. And he was good.
Yeah.
But something in that next year really switched on in him. I just think he just really found his voice.
Yeah.
Because he's really dialed into that voice now. And, I mean, he's crushing it out there. He's doing so well. And he's a good kid. And I think he will do well. I think he's going to do great things.
Yeah. He's on the brink of
it's right there.
Breaking through
it's
somewhere.
Right,
yeah.
He's right there. Because he's got the youth part.
Yeah.
He's a good-looking guy. He's got all the aspects you need. He's a great, fantastic. His writing is really.
Yeah.
Since he moved to LA, I can see a big change in just his writing.
I haven't seen him perform in a while.
Oh, I went and saw him a month ago. He was here opening for the guys from Super Troopers, and he did. Yeah, he's hosted. And he crushed it.
Yeah.
I mean, he just went out there and. You know, and he's likable. He's got that smile, and he's got that witty way about him, and people just love him. And I'm super excited for him. He makes me mad.
Well, I'm excited about Big Pine. let's talk more about that. You got Brant Tobler.
Brant Tobler
is one of the headliners.
He's actually not one of the headliners.
No,
he is. The main thing we brought him out was actually to promote his book.
Yeah,
because we're actually doing one of the new things we added into this is book signings and readings. We have a little bookstore in downtown Flagstaff with a great spot.
Talk about a storyteller.
Billy O is going to do it. Brant's going to do it. But actually, Brant is going to do the show at NEU. He's going to feature it. And so he actually got on a show, which we're super stoked about. So he'll be on the NAU show. And I think we threw him in a couple other shows, too. But our headliners are actually, our main headliner is Kayvon. Which I met him. I opened for him at the Comedy Spot, and he has so much energy, and he's so funny, and he's another guy so good looking. It drives me insane. And he's doing a lot of stuff right now. He's traveling a lot. He's doing a lot of big things. So he's our main headliner. Then we also have Allison Gill, who is from from Arizona. She went to St. Mary's, I think, or Xavier, And we kind of did that on purpose. We kind of picked a couple headliners that are from the Arizona ties just for this first year. And she actually just recorded her special in San Diego that Hillary got to go to, and it was amazing.
Where at?
you know, you would ask, and it's not like a big name comedy club. It's really cool.
Theaters or something?
Yeah, I don't even know if it's that. It was this really cool venue. Hillary FaceTimed me when she was there. Cool. And it held about, like, I think she said like 85 people.
Nice.
And she said it was a really cool setup, something that she wants to use one day. And so she's coming. Freddie Lockhart,
yeah,
who's from here as well. And I got a chance to open for him at the Comedy Spot. Cool. And he's a great guy.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are really excited for him. We have Jack Jr., who I think is one of the he's really coming up quick, like really gaining some speed in the comedy world. His dad owns Ha Ha Comedy Club in California, which is a big comedy club. I mean, Chris Tucker was there last night. I mean, the Wayans brothers, they go there. That's where a lot of them started off, and it's a big club. And he books it. And I met his dad. I went there to Sydney Smith has brought me to LA, and he did a show there, and I hung out with Jack Senior and Stuttering John from the Howard Stern show. After a show, he like cooked us food in the back, and he was such a great guy. Nice. And I've opened for Jack a few times here, and I just think he's really, really good and really funny, and I wanted to kind of bring him into this.
Cool.
You know, while he's on this steady pace up, and so he's one of our headliners. And then we have we partnered up with Pride this year, Flagstaff Pride, which is huge because they're just such a big and fantastic organization up in Flagstaff. They have such a great following of people that they really come together.
Yeah,
and they partnered up with the Orpheum, which is a new venue we got this year too, which we're really excited about. But we're doing a gay Pride show at the Orpheum on Friday night. And we have Marsha Warfield.
When I saw that post, I was like, I get it.
Which I am super excited about because as a kid, I watched, I can't think of the name of the show, Night Court, all the time.
Yeah.
And she was hilarious. She was one of my favorite characters on it. Her and Bull, you know, were the two guards, and they were just hilarious. And we didn't even think about her. And J.C. Anderson, who runs a monthly show at the Orpheum, and he lives up there, kind of recommended it to us, and Brant Tober is close with Marsha Warfield, and they're so excited. So I think that's going to be such a great show.
Yeah,
we got and we're also bringing a bunch of the festival comedians into that show to start open it up. EJ Nonstop, Gene Moore is going to host it. And then it's going to be followed by a comedy drag show that is going to be insane. It's going to be awesome.
Do your Britney?
I'm not going to do my Britney. I'm going to leave that one to the professionals. I'm doing no time.
Really?
And this one thing I've noticed with festivals, and I told Hillary from the get-go, I said, this is not about me.
Yeah.
This is not about me. It's not about her. This is about the festival.
Yeah.
And really building something in Arizona great. And I had a problem with when we put that list of comedians out that got in. I had a big problem with my name being on that list.
Yeah.
I didn't want to take a spot of someone that deserved to be there. I'm going to host the final show, but I'm going to just do all my thank yous. I'm just going to thank everybody that was involved. I'm not allowed to bring Hillary on stage because she won't let me.
Nah.
She's terrified to be in front of people. But I'm gonna do all my thank yous, and I'm gonna bring up the first comic, and that's it, because it's just not. This isn't the Jack Galvin Festival. Yeah. This is the Big Pine Comedy Festival, and I want every spot to be taken up by a comedian that deserves it, and to give people opportunities. You know,
but the names and the level of talent that's coming through, I was blown away last year. And then this year, looking at those names, I'm like, this is turning into a powerhouse of a festival.
I mean, there's some names on this list of headliners.
Yeah, oh yeah,
that
yeah.
are features that applied to the festival. Key Lewis, he's a headliner.
Yeah,
you know, someone I've opened for, and he applied, and I was just like, which made me feel good because now people want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
And I think that's important. And we're trying. You know, our goal right now is to make sure we get industry up there.
Yeah.
You know, Rick Bronson's, you know, might come up and teach one of the classes.
Nice.
You know? And I say might because these people are very busy.
Yeah.
They have a lot of things going on. In his, you know, when he told us, he says he wants to be up there and he'll do whatever he can too.
Yeah.
But improv's coming up there, people from the improv. I have a bunch of agents that just call you at it randomly to try to get
nice.
Their clients in the festival. And, you know, I invited them. I told them I'd pay for the room. I want people up there that can help people get somewhere in this game. So,
because then it really makes the festival not just entertaining but of value. Like you're saying, it's you, with the workshops, they're coming away with tools.
Yeah.
They're coming away with contacts. Mm-hmm. It's great. Some of the festivals were, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You go, you have a great time, and you go away going, "Hey, I met so and so. I met." But when you're coming away with basically an education, on how to succeed in the art form that you've chosen,
mm-hmm.
that's invaluable.
It's invaluable, 100%. And that's what I think a festival is supposed to be.
Yeah,
it's supposed to be a tool.
Yeah,
that if you get into it and you work hard enough to make it into one of these things, you can go up there and learn from your experiences. You know, a lot of our shows aren't in comedy club venues.
Yeah,
you know, there are still a lot of them are still venues that have, you know, a stage.
Yeah,
you know, and they're away from loud noises. But, you know, I want people to go up there and work, you know, and work a little bit, you know what I mean? And you know, try out different
flex
aspects.
Flex those muscles.
We have a lot of shows that are theme shows that are going to be up there. And, you know, I think, because when I think of comedy, I think of theme shows, especially in the last couple of years, because there's so many shows.
Yeah.
They can't all just be straight stand-up.
Yeah.
You're not going to bring a crowd out. You got to have something to it. And I know a lot of people don't always want to do a theme show, but I think it's a valuable thing to learn to do. Tool. It's a valuable tool to be able to go up in any kind of scenario and do shows. Yeah. Now, obviously, there's going to be a lot of straight stand-up.
But with the improv, too. With the themes and with a different challenge, you're going to really start to grow as a performer, grow as a writer.
You're going to grow.
Yeah.
Because you're going to be thrown in different situations. You know, and plus you're just going to... A big tool in comedy is being able to, you know, our thing from the beginning is we got to make opportunities for ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, and there's so many comedians that, you know, you're not always going to get every show and you're not always going to get everything. And you got to make your own opportunities.
Yeah.
A lot of these places that where you go pitch a show, they don't want just a straight stand-up. They want a themed show that are going to bring people out. So if you learn how to, if you go to these shows and you work them and you do them, you can take that knowledge back with you to your hometown and do something just like it.
Start a show at a bookstore.
And do something like it, whatever.
Or
you know?
A deli or wherever, yeah.
Because this isn't like it used to be. This, you know, there's no Carson.
Yeah.
You know, there's no... I mean, the store's still there, but it still even has a different vibe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You have to make opportunities for yourself. Not saying that those guys didn't, but today there's so many more comics that you have to. If you're waiting for someone to give you something, it's never going
to
happen.
You need to find your path to where you want to get, and there's so many opportunities for that. Whether it be podcasting, video, YouTube, web stuff,
there's so many outlets.
There's so much you can do, and with, you know, whether it be coffee shops, bookstores, wherever, there's unlimited opportunities to have a show somewhere.
And
as long as you're getting the quality out. Yeah.
And people are really starting to want to go to shows more.
Yeah.
I think comedy it's on an uphill right now. Even if you hear people talk that work the Comedy Store, they just say it's different than it was 8 years ago. It's got a different vibe.
Yeah.
People want to go out and laugh. There's a lot of things not to make you laugh going on in the world today.
Yeah.
And I think people need an outlet. And so we have a lot of cool, different shows that I hope are going to really attract the college. College, you know, people that know Flagstaff, NAU is it.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
They're going to be a few weeks into the semester.
Mm-hmm.
All right, their feet are planted. Okay, now I know where everything is. Okay, mm-hmm. It's perfect timing. The 14th, 15th, 16th?
14th, 15th, 16th.
Okay, let's go out and have some fun.
Yeah. And that's why we were so excited to get NAU behind us. And we're working with their, they have like their own production company there.
Uh-huh.
They work with, the name is
no, I'll link it. Cause I saw who, you, yeah.
And so, you know, cause they run a monthly show,
yeah,
that they're starting to do now. Like they're next month, they have a big name comedian. I'm not going to say who it is cause I don't know if they've released that information yet, but you know, they're so behind us right now, which is so huge.
Cool.
Because I want to get, you know, the town was our first goal to really get them behind us. And I think they are now.
Yeah.
And it took, you know, we go up there every month.
Yeah. You guys were making the trek.
Even if we don't have anything to say to one of the venues, we still stop by and say hello. And they love that. Because that's how that town is. Flagstaff.
Yeah.
You know, if you're waiting for them to email you back, you may be waiting a while.
Yeah.
But right when you see them, they're smiles and they give you a hug. And it's just a fun atmosphere.
Nice.
But the school was huge. That was a big one. And now that they're 100% on board and they want to help us out in any way, we're going to be up there August 30th for, it's like a student fair.
Like, oh, nice.
And we got a booth and we're going to promote the festival to all the students and sell passes. And
nice.
You know, now Orpheum's, you know, Orpheum, they're celebrating their centennial next month.
Man.
100 years. And now that they're 100% on board, during that party, we get a booth there. We're gonna let us do stuff there.
This is exciting, man. This is really exciting.
And Pride, and I know some people don't think, but Pride has, there's a huge group out there for them.
Yeah.
And what was nice about them is Hillary sat down and had a conversation with the lady that runs Pride. Her name's Kat. And they talked for like 2 hours, and Kat's super excited. But Kat's been working up there a long time,
yeah.
So they're going to help us get more sponsorships, and they're going to work more with us next year. They're going to possibly let us do a show at their Pride event next year in June.
Nice.
But they've helped that a lot just because they have so much knowledge in planning events down there, and that's the great thing is all these people that are finally on board. They have so much knowledge about the town.
Yeah. You don't have to reinvent the wheel.
They love to share it.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, all those three aspects, I mean, to get those locked down in this festival, I mean, in my mind, this thing's only going to keep growing.
Yeah.
I mean, we already have ambitions for next year to make it 5 days and add a movie as a big part of it.
Cool.
And, you know, if you ask Hillary, she'll tell you she has plans to make it a couple-week event.
Yeah.
You know, she wants her goal is to be as big as South by Southwest one day, you know, involve music and all that stuff. I say, well, let's just concentrate on what we can barely get through right now.
But, you know, that's the beauty of it. It's limitless. You get, you know, it goes as much as you can imagine.
And they want that.
Yeah.
You know, when we talk to all the big venues, they've all seen... They've all had this image in their head of what really can be down there in a festival sense.
Yeah.
And you know, Hillary, she has the desire and the drive to really go after it. Bless her heart. Because, you know, I'm a comic, so I'm lazy.
Well, speaking of which, mm-hmm. I know you got stuff to do this afternoon. We better wrap this up. Where can folks find out about Big Pine? What's the best way to reach out?
BigPineComedyFestival.com is our website.
Links to all the social media right on there.
Links to all the social media. Facebook, Instagram is probably our biggest venues we use. Twitter, I think it's very limited. But,
But everything's driven right out of the
everything's
website.
Everything's driven off there. You can go there right now and you can see every comic, all their bios.
Cool.
You can learn about the production teams that we're using because we have a lot of people.
Yeah.
I mean, we have production teams and people that are... I mean, we have a big team of people that are helping us do this because everybody's so excited.
Still looking for volunteers?
I mean, we will take volunteers any chance we can. But, I mean, Hyler and I are going to be pretty much walking around making sure everything is in motion. We have production teams at every venue. They're going to take care of every venue. We have people in this comedy scene in Phoenix that are busting their butts for us.
Yeah.
Not even for us, just for the comedy scene.
Yeah.
They're doing it for the comedy scene. They're doing it to build something great. And, you know, without them, you know, we're nowhere near where we are right now.
I'm looking forward to it.
I'm glad.
Excited. It's going to be a lot of fun. BigPineComedyFestival.com. And where do folks find out about you again?
The Real Jack Galvin on Instagram and Facebook, and that is in therealjackgalvin.com is my website. And then Comedy Heroes is the other thing I really want to plug to. Is,
no, please.
Comedy Heroes Tour. We start that next January, and we're going, you know, we're doing it ourselves. You know, we're all, we're planning this ourselves. Nice. We're going to get an RV, and we're going to, we're going to go from here all the way to Florida, up and around. We're hitting everywhere.
That's a documentary in the making.
Oh,
there.
We're filming the whole thing. Right. The whole thing is being filmed. I have a really bad stomach when it comes to eating things I don't like. I'm not good at it, so they're going to make me eat stuff in every town and lose my mind. But it's going to be fun, and we're taping our our DVD that we're going to sell on that tour. This 28th of January at Toso's at 7 and 9 o'clock.
Nice.
Two shows. So we'd love for people to come out and do that. It's $10 a ticket. And obviously we're using that money to go towards
fund the tour.
To fund the tour and get the DVDs put out and stuff. And we're each doing 20. There's four of us. So
nice.
Normal show. We might have a couple special guests pop in and do some short sets.
Sweet.
You know, just because, you know, we're family. We love each other. We try to give each other as many possibilities as possible. And that's
all right.
That's it.
Well, hey, thanks for making time for
Thank
me.
You.
I don't want to take away from father-son time this afternoon. So have fun doing that.
Thank you.
Mainly get your pass to Big Pine Comedy Festival. And then anywhere, wherever you happen to be listening to this, search out a comedy show, bar show, comedy club, improv troupe, anything. Go out there
support
and
support local comedy.
Yeah, support the local ones.
We appreciate it.
It's a lot of fun just to sit and watch. And if you got the inclination, find yourself an open mic and go on up.
If you have any desire to ever get on stage, just do it. You're never going to be prepared enough. Just do it.
All righty. Thanks, Jack.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It. Mm-hmm. Well, that was it. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in and downloading The Mile High Show. Please go on iTunes, give us a rating, a review, send us a message through our Contact Us page. Support us if you can with that Amazon link at milehighshow.com. Also, there is a link there for Audible where you can get a free audio download, choosing from over 180,000 titles of comedy, podcasts, books, magazines, lectures, everything. Audible is at audible.com using the code MILEHIGH at checkout. Get your free audio download and a free 30-day subscription by using the code MILEHIGH at checkout. BarkBox is also right there. BarkBox, Audible, and Amazon. Use those links to help us support the performers, entertainers, musicians, comics, authors, and just all-around interesting people that we talk with. So thanks for tuning in. We'll talk at you soon.